Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Bramling.
I'm Jenny Prentice.
I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, we have our first mailbag show of the 2021 season, preseason maybe. But before we get into that, we have some business to take care of. We have winners to announce, and we have stuff to send out.
Woo!
This is easily going to be the most anticlimactic moment in podcast history. So we asked people to send their guesses for how we had ordered the divisions for the division preview show, and a couple people won, and we'll get to that. But the answer, and I'll run it through one more time in case people want to play the home game for one more minute. We did AFC North, then NFC West, then AFC East, then NFC East, then AFC West, NFC South, AFC South, NFC North. And the reason we did it that way, it was order of reverse volatility.
Specifically at the quarterback position.
Well, overall. I don't know if you have to specify the quarterback position, because I think that makes a team most volatile if you have sort of question marks at the quarterback position. But that was it. Order of reverse volatility, which would also be a really good album name for like the Mars Volta or something like that.
But, oh wow, yeah. Well, great work, yeah. Gary. You came up with a system that few people could guess, but that did serve us well. By the time we recorded the NFC North show, Aaron Rodgers was back in the fold. Everything worked out well.
It worked. The practicality played out, and I think that's what's important more than the fact that it was just a really dumb guessing game that nobody enjoyed. And I don't want to spoil anything. We don't do this live. Podcasts are not live, but I can still hear like a collective groan and the sort of tapping of unsubscribe on phones across the country. It's traveling through time and space, and I can hear it right now.
It's
it's
unsettling. But I would say in general, I enjoyed the process because like you, the viewers, I did not know why we were doing certain things, but I also have a hard time paying attention. And there were at least 4 weeks in a row where I was like, where's the outline? This is so stupid. And like, you know, every week it's in the same place, and Gary and Jenny would have all their stuff filled out. And so I'm taking this as an opportunity to learn to be a better teammate and to pay attention more. And I hope you all did too.
Well, Connor, you did draft all the Mad Libs, so I would say you more than carried your weight.
Drafted all the Mad Libs, and there's a charm to the fact that we sort of have to game plan around you a little bit. It fulfills us in a way. So
I'm 2018 Blake Bortles.
Oh man, that is
wow.
Oh, don't say that. That's too much. That's too harsh.
Yeah, that's so mean.
Well, the people who got it right were Ken from Massachusetts and a friend of the show. Well, they're both friends of the show. Matthias from Twitter, who's at Sherbin81. And Matthias, I need to DM you and you need to send me an address. And we just have to send all sorts of stuff. Jenny's going to send some MMQB stickers.
Yes.
And then Connor is going to send, just a collection of business cards, including that card to get into blue, club blue.
Just blue.
Okay. Blue. Out in Indianapolis.
I might throw in some bonuses too. So just be aware that it's mostly a house cleaning on my part. So I'm just giving you stuff that I am too lazy to throw away. So enjoy it.
Okay. I like that. And we're going to have more of these coming up. And I promise there'll be better games as we go through the season. But chances to win. The prizes won't be better, but the games will be better. How about that?
I mean, you could say what you want, but the MMQB stickers are a vintage collector's item. They're no longer in production, and there's a limited release. So once they're gone, that's it.
It's a non-fungible token.
but physical as well.
But yeah, but something next that you step. Can also put stick on the refrigerator.
Next level. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the mailbag here. This will be truly enjoyable. for all, I promise. And this first one, this is Sean coming in from Waltham here. We are the morning after Mac Jones' preseason debut. And the question is Mac Jones in the MVP running or merely a lock for Offensive Rookie of the Year? And I'm gonna let Connor open this one up.
Good question, Sean. I would say that that's you, along with a lot of other Patriots fans, were very confident last night. Like, there was a standing ovation when he came out, almost like if you're in England and you watch the coronation, and it's because you're so confident that you're passing power on to power, you know, and you're just like, oh, this is going to go flawlessly. Like, it wasn't even a nervous applause. It was just like, there he is, another Tom Brady. And, but he played really well. You know, I think that it says more about Mac Jones, the things that we couldn't say about last night, right? And that is, we can't say that he didn't throw deep. He did, and deep and on target. We can't say that he didn't throw timing routes. We can't say that he didn't run a two-minute offense effectively. We can't say that he made a lot of dumb decisions with the football. And so I think that all these things combined lead me to believe that, at the very least, he should be in conversation for week one starter. Like, I think that I don't think that's an outrageous thing. I think he does exactly what Josh McDaniels wants a quarterback to do with the football.
Connor, I think you made a really good point in the column you wrote last week that people in New England are accustomed to believing that things will work out at the quarterback position. And so this rookie quarterback comes out and looks good in his debut, and it immediately allows you to imagine all of the possibilities in a way that a lot of fan bases, for instance, the Jets, would not be able to. One of my Jets fan friends, his name is Jack Dickey, he used to work at Sports Illustrated, recently said to me that being a Jets fan is every few years being reminded that Peyton Manning was also terrible as a rookie. And I thought that like really summed it up, because you see again, like, oh, Zach Wilson throws all these interceptions, but remember, Peyton Manning set the rookie record for interceptions. So this could actually be a good sign. But in the Patriots world, you know, you can believe in everything great at the quarterback position. So last night's debut, I am not surprised that Sean from Waltham is running away with possibilities.
Yeah, it's the old classic preseason headline from 1998, Leaf outduels Manning, which it just kind of allows you can draw whatever conclusion you want from all these, but there's definitely like a pass-fail aspect for the immediate upcoming season when it comes to these quarterback performances in the preseason, and certainly Mac Jones was nowhere near the fail on that, and you just wonder, at what point will 49ers fans just be throwing a fit that their team passed on Mac Jones?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I hope that's not coming to the future. Trey Lance is going to be wonderful, I'm sure. But yes, it would be some sort of twisted irony to live in that world 3 years from now.
Really looking forward to taking you out of context on that.
Daniel
just tweeting part of that.
Daniel from Texas is up next here. I'm curious what your thoughts are on home field advantage for this season. We've seen a marked decline in its importance over the past few years, with last year being a total wash, partially COVID-related. What does the future hold? And I'll start by just throwing out two stats here. We, of course, know last year was the first season that home teams had a losing record overall. They were one game under 500 with a tie in there. So I guess a half game under 500, you could say. But one thing that often comes up when we discuss home field advantage, well, maybe not when we do, but when others do, is the penalty factor, and road teams are more prone to penalties. Road teams were really no less prone to penalties last year with the fans gone. It was pretty much penalties were down across the league, but penalties were down for home teams and road teams. And the gap was basically the same it's been between road teams and home games for the most part. We've even seen seasons where home teams committed more penalties. But yeah, so there was no clear, like, I can see this through the numbers type of swing outside of just the fact that the win-loss record changed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see... I mean, I think this year is going to be another outlier, because I just have a feeling that a lot of these games are just going to be fans fighting over dumb stuff that have nothing to do with football, right? Like earlier this week, we saw the New Orleans and the Saints mandated the proof of a negative COVID test or vaccination. And, you know, the anti-vax crowd is getting pretty fired up about it. And I just think that this we're destined to do this. And it's sad and it's unfortunate, but we're destined to use these public events where proof of vaccination is required as a forum for you to say that you don't think you have to do it and blah, 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 blah. And I think that we're going to be fighting each other more than we are going to be in the typical fan mindset when we get to these games. I don't see it being and maybe I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see, you know, that typical fan sunny fan experience coming back right now.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Connor, especially we've seen lots of situations of fans behaving badly over the last several months. I mean, certainly some of the unfortunate incidents during the NBA playoffs, the Tour de France, where the one fan stepped in and caused a collision. So we haven't really seen, like, maybe it's a result of exactly what you're describing. Maybe it's a result of people having been cooped up and not going to sporting events for a while. But certainly the early returns on fan behavior while returning to sporting events have not been great. The other thing is, I feel like this is an interesting question from Daniel, because I've always kind of thought that there's a small number of teams that have home field advantage in the NFL, but there are also a large quantity of teams where it's not much more than, you know, being able to play, you know, a couple miles from where you live and not having to travel, et cetera, which I know is baked into home field advantage. But this idea that every stadium really is a difficult place to play for the opponent doesn't hold up in a lot of NFL markets. Like, I don't know, Arizona or Cincinnati, or, I mean, there's of course the big ones that come to mind as being very difficult places to play because of the noise, you know, Arrowhead, Green Bay, Pittsburgh, Seattle. What am I missing? But you know, Connor, you and I have covered both the Giants and the Jets, and I never found MetLife Stadium that intimidating of a place for opposing teams to enter. I think the most intimidating part of was coming to the old Giants Stadium, where there used to be those swirling winds in the end zone.
Yeah, MetLife Stadium is like a threat neutral cheese grater, you know, and you just go in there. It does. It looks like a kitchen appliance, and you go in and you're just like, meh, you know. There's really not a whole lot. And both of those fans, you know, especially the Jets, the guy who leads the cheering quit. Like, he was so, you know, so what, how scared am I of that? You know, I don't know.
You know what a kitchen appliance it looks like? It just came to me. It looks like one of those salad spinners because of the little fins that stick out.
Oh, yes, it does. It does look like a salad spinner. But you know what? It's looking less like a kitchen appliance is because I was informed of this. This was big news last night in a conversation with a neighbor. Stainless steel is out. White kitchen appliances are coming back. Get ready for
really?
That.
Mm-hmm.
That's surprising.
Person is very steeped in the HGTV world. I'm just saying.
It's a bad move. It might be, I mean, it might be happening, but it's just a bad move. I mean, they're just more difficult to clean or to get to look clean.
Yeah. Well, so the basically MetLife is going to have to redo the facade now to be kind of an eggshell white instead of a very ugly stainless steel color.
Well, these days in the United States, an arena is outdated after it's been open like 2 or 3 years, Connor. So no surprise there.
Jenny and I are going to be footing the bill for another stadium.
We should clean up from a week ago here. We were completely baffled by our discussion of US Bank Stadium in Minnesota and whether or not it had a retractable roof. It does not. But Ron J. Miller just checked in to say the south roof on US Bank Stadium is solid glass built to track the sun's path in the fall and winter in MSP. So when you watch a game, the field is brightly lit. An open stadium by the sun. He claims that he once got a sunburn there, but he also points out there are there's a facade with 5 hinged windows that opens to let the outside in. I don't know about the sunburn thing. I don't know if this would hold up to fact check. I don't know if Ron is a reliable source, but he did link to the 5 hinged windows that let the outside in. So
you know, I have to say, I was there for a game and early October, and I think I remembered the windows being open, but I'm the one that introduced that inaccuracy to the show last week, because I can't imagine that a retractable roof would be very, would make a lot of sense in Minnesota. So my apologies. Thank you for the fact check.
Well, also just in general, retractable roofs are like, it's like stainless steel in the kitchen. It's just not, it's not trendy anymore. Who does it?
Who wants that?
All right. This next one is coming from Chase. Would you guys be able to rank for this upcoming season your favorite dark horse teams based off of chicken wing flavors? Would we do that? Yes, we'd do that. For this exercise, Chase lays it out a little bit. I'll give it to you. So we're each going to pick a dark horse team. We're just going to do a dark horse team because we're going to be, you know, we have a couple shows left before the season starts, and we're going to be giving some, we're going to be handing out some takes here. So we'll limit it for now. We'll ration it. But Chase's sort of grades here are medium. That's a team that has little to no heat. Mild, team that has a little heat, but for some too much. Hot, that is a team that is overwhelming heat, but is barely touched. And Buffalo, that team has a disgusting amount of heat, but isn't being touched. And then he has a dark horse flavor, if anyone wants to dip into that, which would be spicy garlic parm. That's a team that has a decent amount of heat, but leaves a tangy, non-overwhelming, enjoyable flavor. Let's go
garlic
with Jenny.
Garlic parm is a disgusting wing flavor, by the way. But anyway, yeah? go on. Yeah, it's gross.
Those seem like two... I've never tried it. It seems like two unoffensive flavors.
Mm-mm. Well, it seems like, I think this is really good. I like how he's laid it out, because garlic parm is not the wing flavor you would go for first. So it makes it perfect for the dark horse. Now, I think I discussed in a previous show that I'm not a big chicken wing fan. It's too much work and it's too messy. So I haven't had a spicy garlic parm. But I think for these purposes, I think it really does fit as the dark horse, because it's kind of an outlier. So I'm going to go with the Chicago Bears. And my reason for this is, again, don't want to read into encouraging reports about Justin Fields in training camp too much. But I think if he has the opportunity to play early, which it looks like he will, and he clearly has a lot of talent. He was somebody that a lot of evaluators thought should have been drafted higher than he was, or could have been in the top three quarterbacks that went off the board and wasn't, then the Bears could overachieve this season. They have some holes on the defense. Obviously, they lost Kyle Fuller on the back end, but they still have a lot of playmakers on that side of the ball, notably, of course, Khalil Mack. And so because of the potential of Justin Fields to come in and really make an impact, I think they're a good fit for the dark horse candidate, because it might not work out, not certain of it, but they could surprise teams if it does.
I like that. I can get on board with that. I'm going to put mine. I'm going with the Jaguars. And I think maybe 3 months ago, you would have put this firmly in medium. But I think they're getting into that kind of like mild, hot range, because just no one's really talking about them. I mean, I feel like the Trevor Lawrence storyline almost just kind of got old, because it was like, okay, well, they drafted him. He's probably going to be really good, and he's going to start day one. And now we don't have anything else to talk about, so we just don't talk about him. But yeah, I don't know. I think this might be a playoff team, especially if the Colts are going to be battling injury early on here. I want to really, really, really badly draw a comparison between these Jaguars and the first edition of the Andrew Luck Colts, because I do think Trevor Lawrence is that kind of transcendent quarterback coming in with that team. So I really like them. I want to find some excuse to like put them in the AFC title game or something like that. Rationally, you probably can't quite do it. But I'm not even sold on Urban Meyer, but I think when you look back at Andrew Luck, I don't think you'd be sold on that staff or that organization at that point either. I just think Lawrence is that much of a difference maker there.
But you're right, Gary. There has been so much little conversation about Lawrence, so much less. Wow, that was not an English sentence. But compared to some of the other quarterbacks who are in, there's situations that are potentially more intriguing in the sense of Trey Lance versus Jimmy Garoppolo, or will the Jets have messed up the quarterback position again, or Mac Jones, like now it's really the start of the post Brady era. All of those things are for some reason a little bit more intriguing than, wow, the Jaguars landed the prospect that teams have been waiting for years to come to the NFL. So another good dark horse.
Good quarterback enters NFL. That's the headline right there.
But you managed to talk about Lawrence without talking about Salukis again. So are you feeling okay today?
For now, the segment's not over. So
okay, great.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
What's your hot wing flavor? Do you have to give one?
I want to put it somewhere between mild and hot. I'll call it mild. I feel like I'm like sticking my chest out if I say it's hot. I will go with mild here.
All right. So quick chicken wing story. We're at the Super Bowl in Minnesota, and myself and Andy Benoit and Robert Klemko went to Buffalo Wild Wings, and I ordered boneless wings, and Robert said, "I didn't know you were a child," and proceeded to just lambast the idea of boneless chicken wings, which are far superior to chicken wings. Do you need to prove something by tearing apart this bone and cartilage, or like, can you just enjoy the process, the fruits of the labor without the process? Like, you don't have to crack open crab claws. You can just have crab meat or crab cakes, you know? Anyway, my flavor is lemon pepper because it's the best chicken wing flavor, and it's not really remotely close if it's done right. The dark horse team is the Denver Broncos, I'm not even sure they have their quarterback yet. So let's not judge it until we know, because I think that could change, especially at the end of August. If they don't like what they see there, there could be some availabilities, in various places. Pat Shurmur is an offensive coordinator, won double digit games with Case Keenum as a quarterback, and I think nearly outdueled Nick Foles at one point in the playoffs. And so I this defense, I think, is just going to be far and away the most talented defense that Vic Fangio's ever had. And if you talk about preseason hype of quarterbacks like Trey Lance and doing all these incredible things, Patrick Surtain is destroying people in training camp in Denver. It's been like a lockdown. So imagine three really good lockdown cornerbacks plus Von Miller, plus Bradley Chubb, plus the best safety tandem in the league. You're looking at a defense that is just crazy dangerous.
Okay. So I think I slightly misunderstood the prompt. But if I was to rank the three that we have picked, I would say that Connor's is the spiciest, followed by Gary's, and that mine would be in last place. But I think that would be the order. Broncos more spicy than the Jaguars, who are more spicy than the Bears, but all in the spicy garlic parm family.
I think we're all there. I mean, again, that's a disgusting chicken wing flavor. And so I think we could kind of move the conversation there. But I think we're all in the same neighborhood. Like, I think we're all in the same cul-de-sac on this in terms of putting ourselves out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I don't want to speak for Jenny. I think you were kind of preaching to the choir as far as boneless wings go. If you can get boneless wings, you get boneless wings. You don't get stuff under your fingernails. There's nothing worse than that.
What's the appeal?
I can't ride with you on the, lemon pepper? Is that what we're going with?
Oh, yeah.
Anything. You don't want to mix fruit and meat. That's a, that's a loser right there. I'm sorry.
I mean, I like lemon chicken, I guess, but I don't know. Lemon pepper, if you're going to go for wings, I feel like you've just got to go in like the buffalo wing category, like buffalo sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I'm sorry, Connor. I didn't want it to be this way, but that's where we landed.
You guys can be wrong. It's fine.
This next one, you know, I'm glad we talked about the Broncos and Bears just now, because this next one is from Tom from the UK, writes in, the Seattle Cover 3 scheme spread throughout the NFL following the success of the Legion of Boom and has never really reached the same heights anywhere else. Can you see the same thing happening with the Fangio Staley tree, or is it more likely to succeed?
Well, so I would say first that the cover three scheme was so, like, almost every team in the NFL was running that at some point, right? After the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. And so while it never reached its height, again, you could argue that, like, almost every team that played in the Super Bowl after that was running, like, a version of that defense in one way or another. But you know, it's impossible to get that collection of players to run that defense, and so I think that there's a lot to consider there. Why I would say no on the Vic Fangio, Brandon Staley thing growing stale is that Vic Fangio, I don't think, has mentored a ton of people. There's not a lot of people out there who have come up kind of underneath him and then gone out elsewhere. He kind of keeps a tight circle, and Staley is one of the few that I think has gone out and gotten another head coaching job. And I think that his defense is very matchup-based, right? So it's not like, this is my scheme, here it is. I would say he's closer to Belichick in that maybe it's going to look a little bit different every week, and you're not really going to know what I'm going to hit you with. So it's a scheme that's not a scheme, if that makes sense. And so that would be my take on that.
Yeah, I was just going to make that point that things that are schemes but not schemes are ultimately more successful. I think a big issue with the cover three scheme spreading was that teams ran it without having the personnel that they needed to run that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times if you have a system that is good in one place, there's this myth that you can replicate it somewhere else. And you even see teams for reaching for certain players in the draft. And while I do understand bringing in players who fit what you want to do, I think more important is using what you have and building a scheme around those things. And that's why we see Belichick doing all kinds of different things. He's not necessarily a 3-4 guy. Sometimes he's a 4-3 guy. It's lots of different fronts and lots of different approaches based on the personnel that he has at the time. So I think with the cover three scheme, there's too much of an emphasis on trying to replicate exactly what they were doing without the consideration for the fact that they had a very unique combination of players in the Legion of Boom that could execute exactly what they needed to do that, and that it would be very difficult to replicate that other places, especially because a lot of those players were younger on their rookie contracts. They were players that the team hit on. You know, Richard Sherman was a mid-round player, right? So it's hard to build those things when you in other places and exactly replicate how the Seahawks were able to build out that scheme.
No, that's a great point. And obviously that Legion of Boom team was more than the secondary. They obviously, I mean, they were incredible up front. I mean, they figured out a better way to use Michael Bennett. They got Cliff Averill. I mean, they were really good up front. And when you have a pass rush like that, as we know, it just makes your secondary look a little bit better. That's a great point on how they built it, though. And if you think of a guy like Richard Sherman, really the Seahawks were the first team sort of looking almost exclusively for those big, long cornerbacks and, you know, the 32-inch arm guys and that sort of thing. And when you're the only team shopping for that, you can get a Richard Sherman in the fifth round. If a Richard Sherman clone came out a couple years later, you know, he would have been a first-round pick because everyone was using the scheme at that point. And we did see, you know, there were a handful of guys who were like, you know, second round picks and sort of that body type that never really panned out in other teams that were trying to replicate that that defense there. But it was just kind of a reminder, like, you know, Richard Sherman is not Darrelle Revis, but also like Darrelle Revis is not Richard Sherman. They played in completely different styles of defense. They're both equally obnoxious when they argue on Twitter. But you know, it's just coming up with a scheme and then finding the perfect players for it. And then once it gets copycatted, it just gets harder to actually get those players because everyone else is shopping at the same store now.
Almost call it like a Trader Joe's, you know, and then, you know. It's like the salted caramels or the cookies that are shaped so you can dip it in the mug. And then once everybody finds out, you can't get them anymore.
Yes, the Trader Joe's favorites. Everyone has the same favorites and they're always gone when you try to get them. So I'm with you on that, Connor. For me, it's the Moki because it's like cheaper than the Moki that you can get anywhere else. Like you get a 6-pack of the green tea Moki and it's like way cheaper than a 6-pack of Moki at like Whole Foods. That's one thing that seems to always be gone.
Like the sesame cashews. Yeah, I can never find them anywhere either.
Lots of good items, though.
Mm-hmm. I only eat Cool Mint Clif Bars, so I can't really relate to you guys. And luckily, there's no shortage of those anywhere. I don't know what I'd do if there were.
Not a popular flavor.
All right, well, let's dive into some nicknames now. We'll pause the mailbag for just a second. A couple questions left, but so last week, Connor sort of recapped his dive into Pro Football Reference and some of the and Pro Football Reference is a wonderful site. And people should use it. We use it all the time, but they list nicknames of players that are, I think the term is, they're not existent. They're not actual nicknames. They seem to be just completely random nicknames that someone just sort of assigned to guys. So we asked you to send in some nicknames or some ideas for nicknames, and we'll see if any stick over the years. And if you want to keep sending them in, we would love to get them. Some of these are on the nose. Some of these are a little more Pro Football referencey, which just positively delights the three of us. But I don't know. We'll kind of I don't know, Connor. I don't know if you want to help read the list here a little bit. Maybe you and I alternate and roll these out. But Owen had sent in, and this one's on the nose, but I do like it. Owen is going with Kindergarten Cop for Lamar Jackson based on his, maybe it was a bathroom break last year in Cleveland.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that.
Kindergarten Cop is a good one, yeah.
Yeah, so again, I think we need to be... the prompt, if you'd like to send in nicknames, like, it has to be absurd, you know? Like, and so, again, some of these are very good, and I'll just leave it at that. So Joe sent in for Nick Foles the Golden Calf because his teammates slash blasphemers routinely create shrines and worship his image. So there's a very deep biblical connection there, so good job, Joe.
That is. Chase, I don't know if you guys remember Chase from two questions ago. That was sort of a different time in all of our lives. But Chase had added it, and I'll read it because that was a wonderful question by Chase. He wants spicy wing for Josh Allen, which is, it's regional. We'll see. Can you yell it? Can you shout it at someone? I don't know.
That's true.
That's also a nickname factor.
I mean, let's call Jalen Hurts cheesesteak or, you know, Justin Fields deep dish pizza, you know?
Yeah, but this one has the added layer of he's got an incredibly strong arm, so he's got a spicy wing.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Sorry, Chase. You're
so
right.
I kind of like that.
Okay. I should stop abusing the people that are writing into the show. Yeah.
If you'd like to be insulted, make sure you send us an email or tweet.
DMMQB@gmail.com.
No, Jenny, I'm glad you picked up. I didn't pick up on that. I'm glad you picked up on that. It does have a double meaning. So that's going out there. That we're improving that grade. We'll send all of you grades. We won't send all of you grades. Marco's going with Kyler the Creator, which is actually a really good nickname.
Yeah, like that's a very genuine, very good nickname. Yeah.
Like it makes me a little bit upset that no one's come up with that before and it's not more widespread. And I don't know if we want to make anything widespread, but Kyler the Creator is probably what Kyler Murray's nickname should be.
Yeah, that's really good. Danny P for Star.
Star Lutulele.
Star Lutulele. Okay, there you go. Thank you for saving me the pronunciation. wanted to nickname him Stromboli for stuffing those run lanes. Points to Danny P. I love Stromboli. We have a Stromboli night at my house every week. So
Star Lutulele, he's a big Stromboli fan.
Yeah, love Stromboli.
I like that. Mitch G from our office. We all know Mitch G. He's going with AJ Brown as Poochie. He's been pushing this a little bit, maybe not as much as the octopus, but AJ Brown, because anytime you turn on Red Zone, you're saying, where is AJ Brown? In the same way that people should be asking at all times, where is Poochie?
And also, what's the reference I'm missing there? Who's Poochie?
It's, oh boy. Ooh. Simpsons.
Was this in Star Wars?
No. Oh, man. Connor.
Oh, I didn't get it either.
Jenny, okay. Jenny, I thought maybe was a coin flip on this, but Connor, you should know Poochie.
I'm being exposed. Listen, I love The Simpsons. Simpsons are great. I just must have missed this one, you know?
No, you don't!
I was just staring episode. into... Yeah, staring into the screen politely, hoping to reveal that I didn't really actually get this.
But that's Jenny's shtick, that she won't get the pop culture references with Pucci.
But it's becoming Connor's now, quickly.
I know.
So.
Yeah. I know. That one stung a little bit. I'll throw out for everyone else who gets the reference. AJ Brown needs to be louder, angrier, and have access to a time machine if that nickname is going to fit. I wrote a couple, and now I need to pull up my own tweet. I went with Justin Jefferson as the beekeeper, which, pollination, and I don't think I have to explain that one. The other one is, I think this one is very fitting, the taxpayer, Taylor Heineke, because he is just, he like every paycheck, taxes come out of it. He's down with that, and literally every year he files his taxes annually, usually early spring. But if he forgets, he'll get to it and he'll pay his fees if he needs
pay
to.
The penalty, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yep.
Yeah, those are very good. I like those. Yeah,
interesting. I actually kind of think Ryan Fitzpatrick should be the taxpayer.
Hmm.
It needs to go through a fact check, and as far as I could, I called the IRS and was like, "Are there any problems with Taylor Heineke's taxes?" And they hung up on me, so I assume the answer is no.
Blink twice if Taylor Heineke is delinquent on his taxes. So before I get into mine, I will just make note that Peyton Manning on Pro Football Reference.
Oh no!
His nickname is Pay Dirt, like P-E-Y.
No.
Dirt, and
no.
I was just like, "This is like undeniably the worst nickname ever." And whoever is out there at this, you know, maybe you were at a Colts game or you were at a Broncos game, and he threw a touchdown, and you looked lovingly at your daughter or your son, whoever you were taking to the game, and you said, take a look at old Pay Dirt, kids. Like, that's a bad move as a parent. Like, you know, you sound dumb, and that's the worst nickname I've ever heard in my life. It's terrible.
This is a really upsetting segment.
Yeah.
Now that we're wrapping it up, that is brutal.
Yeah. But so I'm going to try to save it here. We got Matt Ryan, and we call Matt Ryan the California Raisin because if he's not in a dome, he wilts under the sun. I don't know why I thought that was that funny.
Okay.
It's so stupid. Oh my god.
It really
god.
Is dumb. It's dumb. we called Kyle Rudolph Olive Garden because he offers unlimited salad and breadsticks at participating locations. I don't know why. It's not that funny.
Maybe I'm just not a nickname.
Jenny, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you have to sit through this.
I'm feeling a little lost, I have to say. But keep going, Connor. Keep going.
I think Gary and I are just really tired. we call Joey Bosa Bangladesh because he's the 39th highest nominal GDP. He is the world's 39th highest nominal GDP. This is terrible. Oh, I'm a mess. This is great.
I don't know. I don't know if this is ever making it to air.
Chandler Jones, we're nicknaming him Sourdough because you can bake him in isolation when you're sad. and Christian McCaffrey, we nicknamed him Soy Sauce because he can improve the flavor of most rice dishes.
All right.
Oh man, I'm sorry, everybody. That was the hardest I've laughed in probably like 2 years, and it wasn't funny at all.
Sometimes you just need that. Oh man, Kyle Rudolph, Olive Garden. Yep, it works.
Matt Ryan, that old California raisin. Oh man.
What am I missing? I don't get any of these.
I don't know. Connor and I did so much peyote before the show. We didn't.
You're not missing anything. They're not funny at all.
It just hit right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jenny. Oh, I'm sorry, everyone out there.
No, it's okay. I really wish I could participate, but I'm left perplexed. But I'm glad that you two have the same sense of humor.
And this is why you have to watch the Poochie episode.
Yeah. Connor. Okay. I will do that.
All right.
I'm crying.
We've still got three more mailbag questions to
God.
Go.
Okay.
So let's cleanse go. Ourselves. And let's go with this is a really interesting question coming in from Dan here. What's your favorite stat? Which is I love how open that is, and you could have a lot of different directions you go with it in. And Connor, do you want to lead off here?
Yeah, I'm okay now. So my favorite stat is completion percentage over expectation, because I think that's a great stat. It's on Next Gen Stats, and it shows you, I think it takes a lot into account. So it made, for example, I think Joe Burrow's year seem better than it was last year because he had the least open wide receiver, lead wide receiver in the NFL. Like, mm-hmm. I think AJ Green had the lowest amount of average separation among any receiver, and so the highest among receivers who had the largest portion of his team's targeted air yards. And so all that gets taken into account, and it shows, you know, how much better certain quarterbacks actually are in circumstance. So I like that one a lot.
Jenny, why don't you go? Because mostly I just want to confirm for all the listeners that you didn't leave, as you probably should have.
I'm embarrassed at my participation rate. If this was, you know, where you're getting graded on class participation for the last 5 minutes, I would be getting an F. But I'm still here. I just apparently, as someone once told me, you know, I'm like a tennis ball in high weeds. You just get lost. So I just got lost. I was bouncing in the weeds, and the two of you were laughing in the distance. No, I'm glad to be here for it. Always enjoy, you know, expressions of pure joy. I went with air yards because I think it is a very useful stat for understanding how an offense works. I think it provides important context. It's not necessarily a judgment on a quarterback or not, although it can be if you're looking at is a quarterback's arm strength declining towards the end of his career, but it also can be an indicator of what the offense is trying to do and how teams might play them. So I feel like it's one of those stats where you can get a lot out of it in a short amount of time. You know, another one that I'm thinking of just now that I remember looking up a while ago, but comparing different offenses, how many times the quarterback is under center versus under shotgun or operating out of the shotgun. So I feel like any types of stats like this that give you insight into how an offense is operating are very useful.
And another pop for Pro Football Reference, starting in 2018, they did the RPO counter, which was wonderful on the advanced stats. And so you can kind of track a rookie coming out of college, now that that's so popular, and like see his numbers go down over the years because he doesn't need to use it. I always found that extremely useful.
That's a great addition.
There we go. And by the way, that's a trend this year. I mean, the under the snap reps here are just they're going to be going up across the league here. I admit when I open like a traditional box score, first thing I usually look for is yards per attempt on the quarterbacks. I am going to go with rushing attempts for two reasons. One, I want to continue to be contrarian, and I want to continue to try and lab my take that running backs are secretly the MVPs in the NFL.
What an ass.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, pretty much. But no, rushing attempts do tell you who probably won the game, who was playing with the lead for most of the game. You have a lot of rushing attempts. You probably had a good day when it was all said and done. So I'll justify it that way. I also just didn't have a good answer, and you guys had good answers. So
if you're looking at the box score and you don't see the score, like if that part of the box score is covered up and you're just looking at performances, statistical categories, that would be a good indicator of who won. Well, I remember this Connor again, you know, because we always harken back to the 2011 Jets. Rex Ryan had this thing where he'd always be like, whoever has completions plus rushing attempts, that sum, whoever has the higher number of that for X percentage time generally wins the game. So that would be right in line with what you said, Gary. I mean, it makes sense, like on a very basic level, like as we, yes, I mean, it's an indicator rather than a causality, but whatever the case may be. Oops, sorry. Shoot. My phone made a weird noise. I think I had an alarm accidentally set. Should I make that last point again?
Yeah, that's probably a tough edit, right, Shelby?
Yeah. Okay. I'll just count back into my point about the 2011 Jets. Or wait, did I say anything before that? Oh, I said it about the box score if you're looking at it. Okay, I'll count back in. 3, 2, 1. Yeah, I like that one, Gary, because if you're looking at the box score, but you are not looking at the actual score, like if you ignore that part of the box score and you compared rushing attempts, that would be a pretty good indicator of who won the game. Just like Connor, as we always bring things back to the 2011 Jets, Rex Ryan used to say, if you can win the number of completions plus rushing attempts, whoever has the higher number generally wins the game.
It's the Rexagrian theorem.
That's right.
I could have been on that staff, 2011 Jets, their analytics guy. All right, last one here, and this is a good one to end on. This is from Hail Mary Juana on Twitter, and I don't know.
Now that you read it out loud, then I get it now.
Yeah,
makes a lot of sense. That is so good.
So they sent an article snippet. I can't believe this article is true, or I can't believe this poll is true. Nearly 40% of Americans think they are fit enough to be an Olympic athlete, according to a new study. One poll study, 1,000 U.S. residents. That is completely bonkers. And then the end of the snippet is, the most common sports respondents said they could compete in basketball, soccer, and swimming in the Olympics. That's insane.
What? Like, if you, why would you not pick some like niche sport or something? Like maybe if you train yourself in some random skill, maybe you'd have a slightly better opportunity. Like,
someone's watching Kevin Durant and being like, yeah, I could do that. Like, I'm also a 6'11", just marvel of like modern humanness. that's not very good. But anyways, the question is, staying with that theme, what position would you like to imagine you could fill in for on an NFL team if they called you tomorrow? And we'll sort of limit this. We'll say at least a play, and we'll also say you can't do specialty. So you can't say, like, I'm going to be the holder or something like that. Although that is a difficult job.
I was going to say, diminish, that would be a very high-stress job.
Yes, you know, that sort of thing. But let's open with Jenny on this one.
Yeah, well, thank you for the clarification. That's basically like if you had to play one snap, because I had great anxiety about this question because it's completely unfathomable. But even still, one snap is still completely unfathomable. But I have picked decoy receiver. So it's a run play and you just send somebody split out wide and the cornerback follows them. So you get one person at least away on the defense, you know, similar to how when you're doing a wildcat play, you split out like, or, you know, you have Lamar Jackson, you split out Joe Flacco and they barely run a route. That's where
that's good. Yeah, that's pretty good. Because you have to have someone cover everyone. Like that's just, it's not an option. Connor, what do you have?
Left tackle. you know, I was one of the 1,000 people that responded to that survey. I watch football every Sunday, and you know, I see Myles Garrett or whatever, and I'm like, yeah, I could do that. Let me just get my hands on him. And so, I feel pretty good about left tackle. I would say that the reason that I would do this in ultimately, all jokes aside, is like maybe because they're so fast, you could throw your body at the ground in a way that might draw a penalty flag, obviously, but that could at least get them, trip them in some way. You know what I mean? Like they're going so fast and they wouldn't expect anything. Or I would also expect that my offensive coordinator would have game planned around the fact that his left tackle is a very inadequate man, you know? So
a lot of strike stuff.
Yeah. We're going to get rid of the ball. So, you know,
no offense, Connor, but I don't think there's any quarterback that could get rid of the ball fast enough to be saved from you as his blindside blocker.
I don't know. We did cover Wayne Hunter with the Jets. Oh, just kidding.
Oh, man.
Poor Wayne. I'm just kidding. Wayne Hunter was very good sometimes.
I'm going along the same lines there. I think I could survive a snap as like a, well, I don't think I could survive a snap at any position, but I think if I had to, I think you'd go like a move tight end, like an H-back type of thing where I can sort of motion across the formation and then kind of, it would be a block, but it would be more like curling into the fetal position and hoping someone just sort of trips over me, as the traffic. But yeah, it's, the fear is, am I going to get called for a chop block? Because in going down and sort of covering, duck and cover, am I going to end up basically contacting someone who's already engaged with a blocker? And then it's 15 yards, and then I'm going to hear it from the coach on the sideline in this scenario. But yeah,
we're all getting cut after this game, so you know, I think
and I think coach would probably prefer the penalty to somebody getting injured on the play.
Yeah,
the scenario you've described, you might be injured.
Yeah, mostly. I mean, that's the thing. I think I'd probably die doing anything on a football field for a single play at this point in my life. But because I was even thinking like maybe I could be like the ghost motion guy, like the fly sweep guy who's just the decoy. And I'm like, I don't know. I think I'd like pass out like halfway through doing that, like having to run that fast and that far with like a helmet on. And so, no, that's too much. It's too much. Too much physicality.
I have to say, guys, I think I picked the best answer in this category.
You did. There's no doubt. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Who, you know, where they took this survey was probably outside of like a Spartan race with a bunch of hopped up protein dudes, you know, and yeah, you know, like, and I you said basketball, but there, you know, basketball's starting to move back a little bit. You know, the jump shot is coming back into play a little bit. Like maybe if you had that Jerry McNamara insane outside range, like you could just whip up a shot, you know, and you could be somewhat effective. Like swimming, did anybody watch like Katie Ledecky in the Olympics? You think you're catching that? I mean, just like a phenomenal athlete, you know? And yeah, like you're going to be within an hour of her. Did you ever try swimming? It's so hard. Jenny is a record holding swimmer, by the way. But
yeah, for the Park Forest pool, neighborhood pool. So, you know, pretty much in the neighborhood of Olympic competition.
I was going to say, yeah, she might have responded to the survey too. But, you know, I'm just swimming, I think, blows my mind the most. Swimming is so hard.
It's an incredibly hard sport. I remember one time I had a 100 backstroke final at some big meet, and I was just really hyped up for the final and I was ready to perform, and I went out too fast and I just died in the race, you know, like where your last split is like several seconds slower than any other. And I still remember that feeling of just like, because the lactic acid builds up and you feel like you can't move your arms and your legs. Like, it is a difficult sport.
It's It's just, yeah, it's just nuts. I jump in the pool and just be like, I don't know what to do. They'd have to come get me. Do they have lifeguards at those meets? They'd have to come get me out of the pool.
Yeah, they have. I think they have lifeguards. Yeah. My mom used to be an official, so she would, you know, watch the turns to make sure that they would, you know, you don't break the rules on any turns. You know, you touch the wall and whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But I think there's lifeguards in addition.
Oh, my goodness. Even the stuff like, even if you want to say, like, I do fencing. Like, no, those people have been doing this for, like, their entire lives, and they're really, they're literally the best in the world at it.
With the sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there just really aren't. I would be interested to see what people would say, like, the Olympic sport that would be, like, the easiest entry into. I don't think there are any that are easy, but I'm curious, like, is there one that's like a random skill that less people learn?
Spend a year training and then maybe you could do
maybe.
It?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Probably not.
All right. Well, we have some stuff to do, I guess, train for an Olympic sport, and we'll come back in 1 year and see if any of – well, now we'll come back in 3 years and see if any of us made it. But that's going to do it for this week. We have a couple of really good shows coming up between now and the season. We'll see you guys next week. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Thanks, as always, to senior podcast producer Dan Bloom for all the wonderful feedback he gives us every week. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, and Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.